Sam Speck with you here on the Mighty 690 KGGF as it's Wildcat Wednesday. We speak with the K-State Research and Extension's Keith Martin and Jacob Weber today. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Sam.
Welcome back in as it is, well, it's not quite officially fall time, though it's really starting to feel like it, and
it's been fall for a while, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, according to the calendar, I can't remember, what is it, 22nd or something like that?
21st, I think.
Yeah, 21st.
Yeah, we've been in fall for a while.
Yeah, so with that, I'm sure there's some differences around the gardens, around the pastures, things like that, things popping up. So what have you guys been hearing?
Well, gardens are declining right now, or mine is anyway. Weeds are growing and grass is growing with all the rainfall and everything.
Yeah, plenty of moisture in the air, too.
You almost can't shut the lawnmower off now.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to keep it running, so that's good. Speaking of lawns, this, if you have a cool season lawn, cool season means that the type of grass that is predominantly grown in a particular lawn, not mine. Mine has all sorts of grasses growing in it and other things as well. But if you have a predominantly fescue lawn, tall fescue, this is the time of the year to get it reconditioned. Time to put that first application of fall fertilizer on. Get the plants. Now, when you put fertilizer on fescue or cool season grass in the fall, it doesn't stimulate the type of growth that you would see in the spring. Whereas cool season grass, its life cycle kind of, you might say, begins late summer, early fall, when it starts getting a little bit more rainfall, cooler temperatures. That brings that grass into growth again. And it grows vegetatively, that is, it just produces leaves, doesn't really produce a stem. And as a result, we can put a lot of fertilizer on. Ideally, it stimulates more leaf growth, more lateral shoot development, which thickens the lawn, makes it more resistant to wear and also to weed invasion. And it helps develop that plant, want to put on some primarily nitrogen fertilizer here, a little bit of maybe some potash. And most lawns, based on soil tests I see for lawns, very few lawns would ever need a phosphate fertilizer application. So we're looking at a type of turf grass fertilizer that doesn't have any phosphate in it. And a lot of the newer formulations of turf grass fertilizer have omitted the phosphates for that reason. So we'll put on enough fertilizer to be equivalent to about a pound and a half of actual nitrogen for every 1,000 square foot. And in order to get that, we have to look at the fertilizer analysis. A typical fertilizer for lawns now has around 30% nitrogen. That would be the first number on the bag. And that means that every pound of fertilizer has 0.3 pounds of actual nitrogen in it. So to get 4 to 5 pounds, 1 pound or 1.5 pounds, we need to divide 1 by 0.3, and roughly 3 to 4 pounds of fertilizer takes to make about 1 pound of actual nitrogen. And so we want to spread that over 1,000 square foot of lawn area. And so at that point, you know how much fertilizer it takes out of the bag. You've got a lawn spreader. You have to kind of calibrate it to put that much on. Most lawn spreaders have a kind of a dial on them that gives you an indication about where that setting would be. However, there are variations, and there may be some inaccuracies, but we'd like to get within range. If we spread it and measure out 5 pounds of fertilizer, put on 1,000 square feet, and you run over it with the lawn spreader. You got to measure the area of the lawn, too, by the way. Figure that out. But say you have a 1,000-square-foot lawn, and you run over it with that spreader, and it only puts on 2.5 pounds. You just run over it again. to get
just get more exercise.
That way. Get a lot of exercise that way. However, if you only make it about one third of the way and you used up the 5 pounds of fertilizer, you probably better dial back a little bit.
Take it down a notch a little there. Yep. Yeah. Now, what would be the result of someone kind of not consciously keeping an eye on that and over fertilizing?
There are obvious mistakes that can occur, and it's can be embarrassing, especially when somebody is not very accurate about keeping the fertilizer spreader over a uniform path, wandering back and forth on the lawn. You can see where the grass is green and it's not green. We see that. We got a lot of pictures of that. Some places where the fertilizer is put on too heavy, the grass either really grows very tall, very fast, or it gets burned and you have a dead spot. We see that. Got pictures of that too. Be careful. A good lawn maintenance person is going to maybe have experienced that once in a while, those embarrassing things, and that makes them better. That's what mistakes are for. They're educational in nature most of the time.
It's an opportunity for education if you choose to take advantage of it.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some, and certainly, like you had said, everybody has probably run into it at one point or the other, and you will certainly know if you missed a spot in your backyard.
Yeah. And Sam also, he's talking about fescue and lawns, but fescue pastures would be the same thing. You'd want to put somewhere around 40 to 60 pounds of nitrogen per acre, which would be pretty equivalent to a pound and a half per 1,000 square foot. The main difference from what Jacob talked about was in pasture situations. Most of the pasture soil tests I get are really low in phosphorus, so you'd want to go ahead and include phosphorus. But it's just like a fescue lawn situation. It's going to thicken it up. It's going to build some root reserves. It's going to hopefully make the pasture more resilient, I guess you could say. Probably the ideal situation would just be to do that as early in the growing season as you can, particularly on the fescue, because you're on the pasture, because you're just going to get a little bit more forage production. In addition to strengthening the root system, the forage production during the fall and winter is very valuable, because the more forage you have, that means the less hay you have to feed. So it would be an economic impact by getting a little bit more fescue growth. But the same things would apply, as Jacob said, and really the only way we can know exactly how much phosphorus or potassium in a lawn or a pasture would be to actually take a soil test. If you've had a soil test done within the last 3 to 4 years, we can greatly fine-tune the amount that you put on compared to just a guess.
Yeah, and that was, I hate to interrupt you there, but that was one of my questions for you as well. Is, I was curious as to why at this time, we're getting cooler temperatures. Obviously, growth is going to be a little bit less and less. Why would this be the time? But it is to kind of bring that resilience in the root system down.
And fescue is a cool season grass, so it ideally likes temperatures in the 70s. So actually, there's going to be probably two-thirds of the growth of fescue is going to be in the spring, a third is going to be in the fall. So what we're trying to do is just improve the amount of growth that we have in a pasture situation, just because that forage is pretty valuable, because, again, it replaces
certainly
the amount of harvested forage you have to feed, or the amount of, I guess you could say, feed you have to buy.
So that do you see the carryover effect of putting fertilizer in the fall at going into the spring in the like we do in the lawns? Putting the fertilizer on the fall, that nitrogen is assimilated into the plant, and it carries over, that effect carries over into spring, so we really can omit any spring application on those lawns if we get those two applications of fertilizer on in the fall. Another question, Keith, you might want to make a comment and talk about phosphate analysis. In the pastures, what's the typical analysis on phosphate?
It's going to be 1 to 2 parts per million, and generally we recommend fertilizer all the way up to 20 parts per million.
Okay. Well, in a lawn situation, I oftentimes see over 300 parts.
So we're in a different, we're in a vastly different situation.
A little bit of a different there. And also, yeah, Keith, I believe, or and Jacob, I believe we have someone on the line with a question here. So hello, caller. You are on KGGF. Do you have a question for Keith and Jacob?
Yes, I do. My front yard is a shady mix. The backyard is Bermuda. And usually I put a weed and feed on in the fall. But the molds have destroyed the yard and the garden. And what can I put on? You have to kill the grubs and stuff, don't you?
You know, that rumor goes around a lot, and I talk to a lot of people. The idea that if you kill the grubs, the molds are going to disappear. And for everybody listening, that's not true. And it's not true. It's not true. You got to kill the mold if you want to get rid of it. So you got to go down to the hardware store and get yourself a mold trap. Actually, pick up about three of them because you increase your ability to get rid of that mold if you have multiple traps. And then if we'll, we probably don't have enough time to discuss the complete intricacies of trapping moles here.
Yeah, exactly.
Before
we still got a couple minutes here, but yeah, with the traps.
All right.
It's pretty frustrating to try to trap a mole.
Yeah, you got to learn how to do it, and once you know, then you could hire yourself out and make lots of money because, and then yeah. But
I think my wife would pay a bounty for the moles in our yard. So.
Some people are fortunate enough to have cats or dogs that'll dig them up and kill them for you, so you don't have to worry about that. Of course, you have to cover up the holes that they do make.
Well, it can't be any worse than the moles.
They're both a problem.
That may be true.
But by the way, earthworms are the mole's favorite food. If you want to, you're going to have to get rid of the earthworms too.
And it won't help to put that any. I don't know what to get.
I tell you what, you can get a product that is a mole repellent, and it actually has some activity. It's a castor oil product, and it's available at your stores. And that product will discourage them from being in your yard.
Okay.
All right. And but follow label directions. But it is known to have a repellent activity.
What do I ask for?
Mole repellent.
Okay.
Mole repellent. And look at the active ingredients. It should say castor oil on it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call this morning. Well, Jacob, Keith, we are coming up on the top of the hour, so we will send it off to the news here, but we will check back in with you guys in the 8 o'clock hour. So I think we'll have to hit on a little bit of mole trapping as well as a couple of other things here for the fall time. So for now, we'll send it off to the weather. We'll be back here in just a minute on the Mighty 690 KGGF.